SBC Media.
Welcome to iGaming Daily, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by the Canadian Gaming Summit, bringing you Canada's premier annual conference and exhibition for gaming and sports betting senior executives from across Canada and beyond.
SBC Summit Barcelona is where you can experience the entire global industry coverage under one roof. Join 10,000 industry professionals for 3 days of game-changing conversation and education. Get your tickets now at sbcevents.com.
It's that time of year where proud parents and family flock to campuses across the country to celebrate the class of 2023 as they graduate from college and head on out into the real world. But commencements aren't the only reason colleges have been in the spotlight this week. Sports betting news has been dominated by headlines related to college recently, whether it be the number of college-age bettors, the much-maligned marketing partnerships between sportsbooks and universities, or what needs to be done to better protect student-athletes as the industry expands. On today's episode of iGaming Daily, we're going to give the old college try and try to elaborate on these particular topics and just talk about college and betting and how it works in general. I'm Jessica Wellman, the editor of SBC Americas, joined by my senior journalist, Charlie Horner, who I feel like your college days are still so fresh in your mind. So, you know, do you get nostalgic now that it's graduation season?
Well, it's interesting, actually, because half of my degree I studied during the pandemic. So I probably had, much different experience to everyone else. So in the end, I actually didn't even attend my graduation ceremony because I was working. And why would I take a day off to go and get a piece of paper that I already had?
Well, I think I more than celebrated for the both of us. At USC, where I went to college, tradition was you woke up at like 5 a.m. to go get like basically vaguely drunk before the commencement ceremony at this real dingy bar with like a dirt floor. So I did that and then was out in the California sunshine all day and then hung out with my family in the evening. So more than enough celebrating for the both of us. College memories aside, I think the biggest news out of the week this week was that Caesars has broken off its deals with the university, Michigan State University and LSU, Louisiana State University. Whether it was Caesars who broke it off or whether it was the colleges that decided that this was too much for them, kind of a long time coming, right, Charlie?
Yeah, like you said in the intro, these deals have been heavily maligned. There's been letters from lawmakers going in. I just think the RG community, they've not been happy with these deals. And we've been left with three of these deals for quite some time throughout the year. I think there was three or four deals that were left this year. And slowly but surely, we've seen them be terminated. And I think we're just left with one now. But yeah, much maligned, something that's been on the cards, and there's been a lot of pressure on this to happen.
Yeah. In addition to that, in Louisiana, kind of flew under our radar. There was a bill that was getting to the point where it's about to go to the governor's desk that would have expressly prohibited these types of partnerships. Maryland passed a similar bill that, in response, PointsBet terminated its partnership with the University of Maryland. For those of you who need a little context on these partnerships, it's not the schools themselves usually that are making these deals with the sports books. It's their media rights management companies. In this case, a company called Playfly manages both LSU and MSU and came to Caesars. And the original idea was, well, you have this giant population of alumni and let's leverage that. And that's kind of how they've defended it in a lot of ways, is that these are schools with huge alumni populations. And when you go to games, it's kind of like going to a Kentucky game where I'm from. You're going to run into more people who are not in school than who are in school. And that's how they were positioning them. But like you said, Charlie, we've got there at MSU, there was a petition from the faculty and staff that was just like, this is ridiculous. You need to get rid of this. So that leaves us with one man standing, the University of Denver and Superbook. There are no rules in Colorado around this. Colorado tends to be one of the more lax states. And I think Superbook, not being a huge operator, really just in a couple of states, might be able to fly under the radar of this. So let's set an over-under. End of 2023, will this partnership still be intact? What do you think?
I think, like you said, with Superbook not being one of the massive players, with Colorado not having specific rules, I'm not sure whether there's going to be that pressure on both parties to terminate this. I probably think that they could get away with it if they wanted to, but maybe is Superbook going to read the room and decide that, you know, everyone else, literally everyone else, has gotten out of this game, will follow suit. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling it'll just keep lurking around. I couldn't tell you an athlete who went to the University of Denver. It doesn't strike. I can't tell you a time I've watched a University of Denver athletic event that I think it's just going to be so just coasting along that only those of us in the industry are going to really even notice that it's there. And I don't know, given that I don't believe Superbook is an AGA member, there's really much motivation for them to do anything. Do I think they ride out the contract and not re-up? That to me seems like the most likely scenario. I don't know how long the contract is. We shall see. In the meantime, lawmakers continue to push these. In New Jersey, there's a bill that if you are going to do a deal with a college, you need to have a responsible gambling program that's like fully funded and invested in it. But seems a little too late. I would assume this is the end, that we are not going to see any more of these partnerships.
Yeah, I think lawmakers coming in and drafting bills and pushing things through now is kind of redundant, because we've seen so much backlash and we've seen the termination of these deals that I don't think anyone's going to go anywhere near these again. We're going to talk a little bit more about it later, but the AGA updated its marketing code recently, and that mandates that members can't make these deals. So I don't see a future in which these deals are made again.
Yeah. Well, you said talk about it later. I say we talk about it now. You talked with the AGA's Casey Clark. First off, we were talking about some NCAA surveys that were done around sports betting and students. Can you tell us just a little bit about what that research kind of indicated and found?
Yeah. So headline out of it really was that 60% of college students in this survey had engaged in sports betting in the last year. Of course, that sends alarm bells ringing, because, you know, the survey was conducted between exclusively 18 to 21 year olds. In most cases, 18 to 20 year olds can't legally bet. So that set things, the alarm bells ringing. Other stats, notable stats to come out of the research was that 57% of students had seen or heard sportsbook ads at a casino, sportsbook, or on their phones. But the thing that really drove this home was that 53% have said that sportsbook ads were making them more likely to place a bet, compared to just 20% who said it would make them less likely to. So some concerning figures that were coming out, and certainly something that I'm sure will be cited by groups and action further down the line.
Yeah, that last one in particular, I think there's so much, and I believe I talked about it a bit on iGaming Daily when I was talking about the event I was at in UNLV, was that we don't really know the impact of advertising. Certainly a single survey, grain of salt, but to hear that it does encourage people under the age of 21 to want to bet more is not the best result, but it is something that can now be cited as an example of some amount of research that has been done. But you unpacked this with Casey. What all did you talk with Casey Clark from the AGA about in terms of kind of peeling off that next layer of this research and diving a little deeper?
Yeah, so I think Casey was talking about the quality of the data. He said that the NCAA's research was thorough. It was a great body of research, but that we've got to strip a layer off and just look under the surface and realize that these figures include daily fantasy sports, which of course 18 to 20 year olds can be engaged in. So, you know, with the added context and with the fears that it was 18 to 20 year olds that were primarily engaging in sports betting, just makes those numbers a little less contentious. And I think looking beyond those figures and excluding the DFS, I think it was around 27% of respondents who had placed a bet in the last, a traditional sports bet in the last 12 months, which is, you know, less than a third, 18 to 20. It kind of maps out that it's the 21-year-olds who were betting. So, yeah, it was just a little bit of salt that you needed to take with it.
Yeah, I mean, again, as someone, I started playing fantasy sports in college, and I know plenty of my friends came in having leagues that they were doing in, you know, high school, which again, before 18, I will say, which shouldn't necessarily be happening, but plenty of people are like, I've been in the same fantasy league since I was a junior in high school, and they just keep doing it. And it's, I mean, I will say a lot of that is for the camaraderie and the companionship and the social aspect versus, and bragging rights versus like, I'm going to make money playing in my $50 a year fantasy football league. I don't know if you can get more bang for your buck than a $50 season long fantasy football buy-in. You know, that's a lot of entertainment for $50.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. Those kind of buy-ins are great, and that's what we all love about the community of fantasy sports.
Yeah, it's a tough road to, or that's not the right way to say this. It's tough to parse, you know, gambling versus social versus, especially at the collegiate level, where it's like, okay, I have a poker game that I go to and I play in because I like the companionship, and we're playing for like fairly minimal stakes. Are you going to cast that in the same light as some kid who like snuck into a casino with a fake ID to play blackjack? It feels different to me, but I don't know where, like, industry-wide, sometimes I feel like we just put such a hard line on it that it almost makes the message a little harder to deliver because people are like, well, I'm doing this and this isn't a problem. So
I think this is where conversations and dialogue between the industry, you know, different compliance departments and regulators need to talk and get the messaging out of what is allowed, what isn't allowed, what is, you know, expected of, you know, what are the consequences for some of these more social minor betting activities compared to breaking and entering into a casino with a fake ID.
Yeah, I'm going to shout out, I know this is bad form to not shout out something on my own website, but Wayne Perry from the Associated Press did a story about kind of stakeholders in gambling asking, should somebody be going to college campuses and schools and doing more to kind of educate younger people about how to gamble responsibly, the same way that we go to schools and have like, think it's long since died, but like the DARE program where we go and teach kids about the dangers of using drugs, teach kids about the dangers of drinking too much, you know, sex ed. We have education programs for all these things, but there is no education program for how to make the most out of gambling as an entertainment and to, you know, avoid the pitfalls of problem gambling. So go check that out from Wayne. It's a good read. You got to throw props when necessary, and Wayne deserves it. I will focus back. I mentioned previously that I did a write-up on research that Timothy Fong has been doing at UCLA about student-athletes. Student-athletes in particular, in the United States in particular, are kind of more at risk for problem gambling issues than most any other group, including pro athletes. So I do think in addition to just educating college students in general, there's a lot of questions about what do we need to do to better protect student athletes. Charlie, have you seen anything in terms of what's been going on in the industry to try to draw more attention to protecting them and educating them?
Well, I guess you've got organizations like Epic Risk Management who will go in and into colleges and speak with athletes, not just athletes, but students, to really try and educate them on the risks of gambling. So there's work like that going on. And I guess there's other different mechanisms going on as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen in Ohio, there's been a discussion if you are harassing athletes on social media, and we can tie it back to your identity, they're talking about potentially putting them on a involuntary self-exclusion list. I think protection from abuse is certainly one that they're going to do a lot more around going forward. I have coming to SBC Americas on Monday a really fascinating talk with Matthew Holt of US Integrity and another program called Athlete Aware. They're working together to create a fully anonymous tip line for things like athlete abuse, sports betting, integrity issues, where athletes can feel comfortable, not just going in reporting, but if they need someone to speak to, if they need to kind of vent or they need to ask questions, they can do this in this incredibly safe space. And one of the points that Matthew Holt made was part of the reason we can't get change around player student athlete abuse is because there's not data. And so the hope is that with the institution of this program, we can start to get that data and be able to go and say, look, you know, 80% of athletes or however many have received threats amounting to like harm and physical violence and even death. This is an issue that needs to be addressed. So keep an eye out for that on SBC Americas going forward.
So that point's really interesting, and it's interesting that you bring up Matthew Holt and US Integrity, because we have had some integrity issues as well as the NCAA figures. We've had obviously the integrity issues in the last couple of weeks, or the last month or so. And I think that's got to play a part here. These are young athletes who they're so exposed to the betting culture, the betting industry. I don't think you can... I know some states have bans on college sports betting, but you're not going to get rid of things like March Madness because it's so ingrained into American culture now. But it's finding a way of looking at that and thinking, right, how do we put a line in between the players and the sport and the noise outside of that? Because I think once you murk those two worlds together, it can get dangerous for those athletes. And I think I don't know whether there isn't any athletes involved in this integrity story, but it's getting a little bit too close for comfort.
Yeah, I mean, we still don't know what's going on in Iowa, where I think, you know, dozens of athletes have been sidelined. That's kind of the separate one from the Bohannon baseball issue. But you're right that that was more somebody who is a parent with inside information to not only the team his kid's playing on, but other teams, was taking advantage of that. You know, I've always said I'm uncomfortable with college prop betting, where you're betting on the performance of a specific athlete in a collegiate athletic event, because as much as there are these incredibly famous college athletes, you know, like Caleb Williams, the quarterback at USC, who's extremely protected and has so much to lose, if you're offering that on a smaller school, that's an athlete who could very easily be approached and manipulated, and also who maybe hasn't been given the education necessary about how to speak about what's going on with the team, so that he or she are not giving away information about injuries or about game plans or that sort of thing. Interesting addendum to this, North Carolina did pass sports betting through the House yesterday. It's on to the governor's desk where he is presumably going to sign it. And during the process of the revisions in the Senate, they took out a provision that would have banned betting on college games up to eight hours before the game starts and during the game. And that was one that some of the opponents voiced was a very disappointing omission. We haven't seen a reg like that per se. I've seen bans on college props. I've seen bans on in-state colleges that you can't bet on. If you're, you know, if it's a New Jersey school, you can't bet on them. I don't really know what that accomplishes. But you're right that we're trying to get around not prohibiting college betting and going about it a couple of different ways. I personally think the prop prohibition is the smartest way to do it. Have you seen anything that you think is particularly effective?
Well, for me, the whole idea of betting on college sports is just such a cultural shock. It's something that a few years ago wouldn't have even come into my mind, because the university college sports scene in the UK compared to the US is just, it's non-existent. You will, you know, different universities play sports against each other in leagues, but it's nothing to the extent where you've got these 1,000-seater stadiums that are getting packed out by you know, members of the public who just want to come and watch. So it's a huge cultural difference that I'm still trying to get my head around. But I think you're right. I think prop betting is, you know, it's rife for or ripe for manipulation, and I think that's something that we should really move away from.
Yeah, and it's also rife for abuse, because you can then, you know, then if that student athlete has a bad day or, you know, overperforms and somebody bet the under on a prop, you're setting up a situation where they singularly are responsible for a bet losing and someone potentially being a jerk and coming at them on social media or in real life. So, all right. That was a nice walk down collegiate memory lane. Anything else going on with SBC Americas that people should know about this week?
Well, we had the Barstool can't lose parlay
hearing so
yesterday. I'll just tee you up to give the listeners a little overview of that one, because I know you've been waiting forever for this one.
I know. Well, you listened to the hearing too, and I think there were a couple of times we were exchanging Slack messages like, did that really just happen? Never thought we would hear so much about Captain Crunch in relation to this hearing. It was essentially an adjudicatory hearing about whether or not the can't lose parlay that Barstool offers was a violation of the risk-free language prohibition in the Massachusetts regs. They brought in like a full-on First Amendment specialist attorney to serve as counsel and discuss how this is constitutionally protected speech. Talking about the reasonable person expectation that a reasonable person would know, looking at the odds and looking at what's required to win a four-leg parlay, that it's tongue-in-cheek, the same way that, you know, Captain Crunch and Crunch Berries, they would know, are not actually berries, and that buffalo wings are not actually made of buffalo, which, by the way, I'm going to get pedantic for a second. That is a stupid argument, because they're called buffalo wings because they were popularized in Buffalo, New York. Not because anybody ever thought that there was buffalo in them. But okay, pedantic rant aside, you can read kind of the highlights of how the commission received those arguments. I think it's safe to say they were not in agreement about the reasonable expectation, a reasonable person expectation, because, you know, saying a reasonable person understands that, you know, crunchy cereal is not actually berries, and that a reasonable person also understands that, you know, a plus 350 money line is a long shot, not exactly apples and oranges. So you can check that out, as well as all our other latest and greatest content from what's going on. And Charlie will be holding down the fort next week as we myself and our other colleague, Nick Ware, travel to Toronto for Canadian Gaming Summit, where we will be on site with iGaming Daily. So be sure to tune in for that next week and check out all of the highlights on SBC Americas and CanadianGamingBusiness.com.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of iGaming Daily, brought to you in conjunction with the Canadian Gaming Summit, being held at the Metro Toronto Convention Centre on the 13th to the 15th of June. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders Magazine. Happy reading.